Hey everybody, we are hitting an Arnold Schwarzenegger classic this week. I don't know if you watched FUBAR this year, but if you have not watched FUBAR, you should. It's kind of a crazy, brief mini-series done on Netflix starring Arnold, but I talked about it on another podcast. In fact, you should look up the Jacked Up Review Show, because I, in fact, will be there. Anyway, in the meantime, we're kind of doing some back-to-back Arnold movies this week, doing back-to-back Arnold movies, which is fun. And, you know, it's nice to talk about silly action. Anyway, thanks for doing all you do to get us on the charts. And just as a side note, this was an old episode that used to be on our now-defunct Patreon, and I will not be the one introing it. It will be our good friend of the show, John. Thank you.
Hello and welcome to Mission Briefing, your all things James Bond podcast. I'm your host, John Copsey, and with me today are...
Hi, this is Nick, your host of the Mainstream IOPA feed and riffer on Cineprov.
Hello, this is Daniel, contributor to popdose.com, frequent annoyance of Nick, and glad to meet my old nemesis again.
And this is Lauren, and I just have a girl crush on Jamie Lee Curtis, and I'm not afraid to share that.
How could you not after this movie?
Oh, right. Boy. Yeah.
So who's hotter in this then, her or Tia Carrera?
Oh my God, Jamie Lee Curtis, 1,000%.
Every day of the ding dong week, mm-hmm. Right?
Yeah.
So if you haven't figured it out, today is True Lies, that 1994 James Cameron spectacular film.
Oh, Jimmy Cameron, you and me, we meet at last again. Yeah.
And I should say at the top, which frequent listeners of you should already know, we have long since burned through all the James Bond films, so we are on tangential films.
Yep. We're still waiting for No Time to Die to come out, but as we're recording this, it just got pushed back to October 2021.
That's right. So every time it gets pushed back, Nick will do a cartwheel.
Yeah, that's right. Good fucking luck.
We're still waiting on the first one.
I'll do it. I'll pay money for that.
You owe us four cartwheels.
Pay money for me to do it or to watch you do
no,
it?
No, to see you do that. That'd be awesome.
Mm-hmm. I mean, and again, like, I bring this up every time. Lauren has been my movie buddy for years, and every time she strains that relationship.
Not as much as that car wheel will strain your back.
Oh my God, I will be down. I'll just be like soaking in a bath of like Epsom salt and disappointment. Like, that's what it is.
Not unlike this movie.
Yeah, that's right.
Segue. This is that fantastic mid-90s kind of action flick. James Cameron, I'm not entirely sure where this falls in his directorial domain. Daniel, I'm sure you know.
It was the movie he did after Terminator 2. Right.
There you go. Okay. And so apparently this was based off a French film.
Yeah.
La Totale? Okay.
La Totale.
Okay. La Totale.
Either way, it's a remake of a French comedy that has basically the same plot.
And in typical Hollywood fashion, the credits say, inspired by a story by James Cameron. And like the reality shows that, hey, I created this reality show, which means I saw it on Dutch TV.
You know, the weirdest thing about this movie is it's so hard to find these days. I mean, it was on HBO Max for a bit, but now it's gone.
But it's 20th Century Fox, so it should be on Disney now at some point.
Well, is Disney like burying it right now or what? I mean,
we watched my copy. I own this, like, and this was because I purchased it before the merger, right? Mm-hmm. And so, like, there's a Blu-ray that is practically an HD DVD that I passed around. It's hard
to
find.
Well, you know what? I was thinking more about it. Do we think it was maybe harder to find because of kind of the legal stuff that happened with this movie with Eliza Dushku?
Oh, please tell us. Go.
Enlighten us.
Point of order here, because she told me this personally. It's not douche, it's douche. Like douche. Push.
Douche.
I embarrass myself.
Okay. Eliza Douche? Like
Dushku.
Eliza Dushku.
Who is the daughter in this film?
Yes.
Who plays the daughter.
Yeah.
There's been a lot of legal stuff on that because she's come out, I believe it was just last year, this past year saying that she was assaulted on this movie by the stunt coordinator when she was 12. Yeah.
Really?
Really?
So, yes. Yep.
That would do it.
That, mm-hmm. that definitely
so
happened.
So I'm thinking maybe it may be because the legal ramifications of it was why it's harder to find or maybe not so available or the rights aren't out.
Well, that
I don't
could
know.
Very well be it, although mm-hmm. amongst the two, I imagine Eliza's the one who would kick his ass these days.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Although, I mean, and again, it's a shame because it's a, well, other than the third act, which shouldn't happen, it's a fun movie.
Mm-hmm. It is fun,
it's,
yeah.
It is very fun, but...
It's kind of like the new Star Wars movies. Like, it hits all the right points. I wouldn't call it a classic, and it's not something like a must-see, but it's a good movie.
We'll
it's entertaining.
Yes. We'll get into this in a minute, but it doesn't do the one thing that Bond's always managed to do.
Be married?
Allow you to suspend your disbelief.
Yeah.
I mean, well, I'll disagree with that a little bit. I do like the world it plays in because there's non-spy people in this world, and we'll get to Bill Paxton, who's kind of amazing in this movie.
Oh, yes.
R.I.P.
Yes.
Bill Paxton. I'm still missing you, man.
Also, I mean, Charlie Heston has an eye patch. Like, what else do you want?
Charlie Heston has a freaking eye patch.
This was
great.
His audition for Nick Fury.
Dude!
It really was.
It's fantastic. So, question, is that what Austin Powers makes fun of later?
Oh, you know, Austin Powers, dude. The absolutely.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
This,
yeah.
Also, I watched this with Zeus, and I was like, Spy Hard rips this movie off also, like, really hard. Like, the scene in the elevator, I think they even got the same two old people. And, like, the horse in that movie takes a wicked shit. And it's just like, oh, it's so great.
Charlton Heston in this movie, that was something else.
No, this has tons of 90s royalty.
Oh, yeah.
Tom Arnold. I mean, I'm just saying.
Tom Arnold.
Arnold Schwarzenegger, Jamie Lee Curtis. I mean, Charlton, Bill Paxton, those are just 90s royalty,
yeah,
so it's a great cast.
Yeah.
Dude, and a smoking hot Jamie Lee Curtis. Well, it's so funny.
Total
that,
girl boner, and I'm not afraid to share that. She's dude, awesome.
I mean, we can talk about your genitals later, but but like, no, it's funny because they like...
I'm not gay, but
no,
for her.
If you were,
you know?
Yeah, she's on the list.
Well, and I will say... Arnold here, when he's not, like, raging out, he's a handsome motherfucker, too. Like, mm-hmm. like it's so easy, because especially since the last movie he did before this is Terminator 2, and he's just a beefcake. Here, he's, like, especially when he's playing, like, Dad Bod, he's, like, his shirt is kind of loose, and they don't put him in skin-tight shit. He's wearing just work shirts, and you realize... Oh, he could just be a dude.
I think Arnold Schwarzenegger's underrated in a lot of what he does, because I remember, I think it was 2004, where he was one of the keynote speakers at the Republican National Convention.
Sure.
And he made a joke about how someone told me I'm as good a politician as I am an actor, and I was like, wow, what a cheap shot. But I think he's actually capable of being a great actor. I got a 4K player recently, and... one of the first 4K Blu-rays I got with it was
T2?
No, it was Total Recall.
Oh,
nice.
Great.
Which okay. looks great.
Yeah.
But he's really good as an actor in that movie. He's like genuinely scared when he needs to be scared. And in this, I think he's pretty good too. He's like funny when he needs to be funny.
He did make the jump very well in the, I guess, early 90s. When, like, going from the beefcake movies of the first Terminator movie and like Demolition Man and... Not Demolition Man. That other one that was like Demolition Man.
Last Action Hero? Is that
maybe,
what I'm thinking?
You know, that's like later. The beefcake action hero to an actual actor.
Yeah.
And like Kindergarten Cop in this movie, like he could show his comedic side as well.
No, I love Arnold. He's definitely got more props than people give him.
Yeah.
And I love, Nick actually shared it. Recently, I love his little video that Arnold shared with him getting the vaccine.
Yes.
And he goes, come with me if you want to live. Like I just, and his speeches he's given recently, he just seems like a good human.
And if you haven't followed him during COVID, he has like a donkey and two ponies and a dog. And he's just like, here I am with my stogie. And the ponies are just here because you should be at home. You should not be out on the street. What are you doing? Maniacs! And he's just like, yeah, I am with my stomach and my ponies. And just like, oh, the Lord.
He's a 70-something-year-old man who's got at least $100 million in the bank. He can do whatever he wants.
He's one of my voices on my GPS, so it's great. Because he'll see, like, accident ahead, get out!
So,
this is great.
John, I think we should go into why we picked this as a Bond movie. Because it's all at the opening scene, especially with Arnold's. You're the host. You should take it from here.
If this were a Bond film, I actually wrote in my notes, this is the cold open. But it's not, since we get the title sequence immediately, and then we go into this sequence where he's breaking into a terrorist-funded kind of party where it's a big wigs from all around the world meeting up in Switzerland and doing something.
They're specifically looking for this billionaire who's apparently an arms dealer who may or may not have, well, it turns out he did, sold a bunch of nukes that he stole from Pakistan to a terrorist group.
Right, so he was looking for the computer that had the various lists or bankrolls or whatever on it. So he had to break in a sneaky spy way.
Well, he did it by ripping off Goldfinger.
Oh, absolutely.
The wetsuit, he's just swimming up there and it's like chiseling through the ice, and then he gets to the grounds and he just puts the wetsuit off and he's already got the tux on.
Which was fantastic.
And it looks like
a dry pressed tux that he had scrumpled underneath a wetsuit.
And it looks like a Sean Connery tux too. It's got the white jacket and the black pants.
Yeah, it.
And he breaks open a capsule of like cologne.
Yes.
Yeah, so he doesn't smell like nasty water.
I mean, classy as fuck.
Now, according to IMDb, apparently this movie caused GoldenEye to get rewritten because the terrorist organization in this were supposed to be the villains in GoldenEye.
Oh. Wow.
You mean the Crimson Dawn or whatever? Crimson Jihad?
Crimson Jihad.
Yes.
Yeah. Oh, I thought 9/11 really changed that too, obviously.
Well, this came out in 94.
Yeah, before. I'm saying...
Right.
Well, funny you should mention that, Lauren, because after Titanic... And I feel like I should put on nerd glasses here.
I mean, don't worry, you already have.
Okay. They were supposed to do a sequel to this that Cameron was contractually obligated to, but then 9/11 happened, and the producer's like, no, we can't put this into development. It's going to...
Yeah.
It's just going to be tone deaf.
Yeah. Well, and for those who haven't seen the film or don't remember, it is jihadi terrorists who threaten to blow up cities in America with nuclear bombs.
That's right.
I think The Rock did that plot better than
it
did come out after this, but I think overall that was more effective.
This movie isn't about that. That's kind of the side plot. The real thing about this is Arnold Schwarzenegger is a super international spy, but when he's not spying, he goes home to his wife, who thinks he's selling copiers.
Yeah, this is intentionally like a comedy. Like it's very, and I think it works. It's very funny, but like, half of this is that it's a comedy, I think.
Yeah. Well, the opening scene is all about Schwarzenegger breaking into this giant mansion with a party, and he does something spies aren't supposed to do, which is draw attention to himself. Like, he walks...
Here's my invitation.
That comes a little later, but even before then, he's like going, why... And he's like speaking, I think, in Swiss, but he's like, why are you serving us this? Where's the garlic? This is garbage. And
he was doing it to defray attention, because he was the chef or something was saying, like, who are you? Like, why are you coming out of the kitchen?
But then he runs into that one guy and he's like, Colonel, so good to see you again.
Mm-hmm. You get to cool your tits here, Daniel.
Well, he dances tango, like, not exactly.
That's more to Daniel's point, because he really draws attention to himself.
Right.
But like, walking through the crowd and saying, hey, how you doing? How's it going, General? You know, that blends him in so that he looks like he belongs there.
Yeah, but this is all Bond in a casino, guys. It's like, I'm going to disrupt here because, like, so, I mean, we'll eventually get to Art Malik and the terrorists, but, like, what he's doing here is 2 years before Mission Impossible with De Palma, right? This is a year before GoldenEye, and what is he doing? He's doing Bond pretty fucking sexy, right? And what does that mean? And again, what is Bond in this era? He's about to first base it with Natalia and with Xenia on a top, and then the second movie, we even have a party scene in Tomorrow Never Dies, right?
Mm-hmm.
So, I don't think
with, of all things 3D glasses or not 3D glasses, X-ray glasses.
And you know what?
Cheapest of Q gadgets.
Well, unfair. But there's no gadgets here other than a really shway van with Tom Arnold in it. You know what? He will never be Q, and it's fine because he doesn't pretend to be Q.
Who's the other guy in that van?
Oh, they call him Faisal, right?
Yeah,
he's a no one from nobody. But he does end up with comic relief in like 1,000 movies. I also think he ends up in Spy Hard, so he's fine.
Well, I mean, he's fine. Yeah,
this is the best Tom Arnold movie. I will say that this is the best Tom Arnold movie. Meet
the Stupids.
Well, it was just called The Stupids, and yes.
Doesn't he also appear in a Friday the 13th? No, a Nightmare on Elm Street movie with Roseanne.
Yes.
He's in Nightmare on Elm Street movie with Roseanne.
Tom Arnold is fantastic in this movie. Yeah, him and Arnold have great chemistry. And Tom Arnold, I love researching and doing trivia on the movies that we do on here just to kind of see. But she's Tom Arnold didn't think that he would get cast and at all. He just wanted to audition. And he wanted to meet James Cameron and Arnold, right? But James Cameron picked up on that chemistry between them right away. Mm-hmm.
I love the back and forth that they had. Yeah. Arnold and Tom Arnold.
I'd like this movie if it was Tom Arnold as the lead.
I agree.
I only disagree because...
Yeah. He's not really an action hero.
That's the point, though. I mean, he's the sort of guy who would... And we're getting later into the plot, but he's the sort of guy who would use an international spy agency to spy on his wife, who he thinks is cheating on him.
I mean, we'll get to that because that's funny. But the guy who we were talking about before, the guy who plays Faisal, is Grant Heslov. He's also in a bunch of movies that you may or may not have seen, but he's in Argo, Ides of March, Good Night and Good Luck, The Men Who Stare at Goats, and Argo. He's a good actor, and he's done a lot since then.
Yeah, he was definitely recognizable. I couldn't have told you where he came from, but I definitely recognized his face.
Yeah.
And he's solid in this. He's the tech guy, and he ends up being briefly with the terrorists in the third act.
Right, he's part of the camera crew, which
that's right. They infiltrate the terrorists.
And then the movie takes a weird turn. We'll get there.
Yeah.
You want to do the plot?
Yeah, okay, so I think we've already talked about most of the plot, but the broad brushstroke is Arnold is an international spy. Jamie Lee Curtis is his wife at home who doesn't know what he's doing. She thinks he's out at conferences or whatever, selling
computers.
Selling computers. And his daughter.
And his daughter is at home, too.
Wait. Selling computers and his daughter. All right, yes. That's an interesting business.
Although in light of the lawsuit, probably not best to go there. But so she's your typical renegade teenager. She's stealing from Tom Arnold when he comes in and hanging out with her boyfriend on a motorcycle. And so we get lots of scenes of Tom Arnold and Arnold Schwarzenegger talking about kids and women and wives and how they're not good. A lot of this coming from Tom Arnold, who's on his third wife, I think he says.
Third or fourth, which is a joke. I don't know when he divorced Roseanne, but like...
Well, that whole thing about what kind of cruel bitch takes the ice cube tray from the freezer is apparently a reference
it's
to...
It's apparently a true story on his actual divorce and what happened between him and Roseanne. And he was telling James Cameron about it, and James Cameron loved it so much that he incorporated it into the script.
And James Cameron does know something about divorce and how it can be funny, so hey.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, and
Cameron wrote this script, apparently.
I believe it.
Yeah.
I mean, it also screams of a Stallone thing where, you know, I have to be the guy who writes all of my own scripts. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, I know I do wear that turned into a Trump right at the end, but I'm doing my best.
And so that's where a lot of the movie dwells, is on the interaction of Schwarzenegger and Jamie Lee Curtis, who's his wife, as she finds out what's going on. That he's a spy.
Yeah.
Not too much later.
Exactly. And we have a whole second act that really has... It sets off up the humor in this movie. It doesn't have anything to do with the overall plot of terrorists taking bombs, which takes up the entire third act. But that's where the humor comes in. He's a spy trying to cover his tracks. Tom Arnold is a spy, his handler or whatever, trying to help him. And Jamie Lee Curtis is... frustrated or trying to figure out what's going on. Yeah, so he gets home from Switzerland after blowing the place up, and they figure out someone's stolen some nuclear warheads. They can't convince Charlton Heston this is the guys that they're after. Yeah. Charlton Heston's wearing an eye patch. He's screaming bloody murder. He is being Nick Fury. And a good one, too.
Oh, well, Charlton Heston was born to play Nick Fury.
He was born to be a raging director. You know, like, he's yelling at his underlings, you get me those files, you get me those numbers, and make it work.
Even well, the and the apes.
Get off my exactly. lawn, you damn dirty apes.
Well, and again, like, I love Samuel, of course, but just going, motherfucker, those goddamn terrorist apes. Like, right? Like, there's just something in his cadence, too, because he's looking, if there's any asshole in cinema that can stare at, like, Arnold Schwarzenegger and he'll lose 6 inches to his height, it's Charlie Heston, and he does that look, and Arnold's like, you know, he's right on rest, and he's, like, scooching down in his fucking chair.
Pharaoh, goddammit, you will let my people go.
Also could have been played by Art Malik, by the way.
Like, I'm sad he's only in 2 scenes in this movie, because he really could have been a more
prominent. I know, I mean, regardless. Thank you, John. This is a good summary, but, like, this movie is crazy complex.
It really is. Yeah. My summary doesn't really give it,
Well, we need to talk about Bill Paxton in this movie.
Oh, dude. Yeah. Can you imagine, like, and again, like, the whole thing is he's a Schwarzenegger's a workaholic. He doesn't show up to family functions. In fact, the whole movement of the
his
beginning
whole
of the
birthday party, they do a birthday party for him, and he doesn't show up.
Mm-hmm.
He swears he'll be home at 8 o'clock, and...
You know Harry.
Right.
And somehow the terrorists figure out he's a bad guy, and they run...
Because he has a camera and the cigarettes. That classic trick.
Oh, yeah.
He puts the camera...
That's how he finds out that Harry's daughter is stealing from Tom Arnold.
Yeah, he puts a pack of cigarettes with a camera in it, and wears some very 90s sunglasses, which has the receiving end on it. So you can see what's happening
in
another
time.
Room or behind you.
Those are awesome sunglasses, I'm just going to say. I'd wear those all day, every day if I could.
The type of glasses you get when you have your eyes dilated and you can't see the sun. that's kind of what they are. So the terrorists attack Arnold and they delay him from his birthday thing. He beats them off in a very James Bondian way.
Okay, this scene was great. What you're talking about... they find whoever the main villain is. It's the leader of the Crimson Jihad.
Yeah.
Okay. The actor.
Yeah. Okay, great. Thank you. Seriously, Nick, I didn't know who the actor was.
I am a river to my people. His name is Salam Abu something. But yeah. Also, I want to introduce one of the characters which we skipped, which is Tia Carrera, who is Persian arts expert.
Yes.
And she's in there.
The chick from Wayne's World. Yeah. Everyone
else. Yep. And I mean, Cassandra. First of all, she's a gorgeous woman. I think she's Hawaiian, but she has this kind of, I mean, smoothness about her. And so she's supposed to be the art expert of Persian art. They feed it into his ear. And he goes, this is Persian. And so she's immediately... into it.
And he literally sweeps her off her feet by taking her for a very energetic tango.
In the opening scene, and then they meet up later, I guess, when he's back in D.C.
She hands him
a business
card from her bra. Which is classic move.
Oh, dude, now, Lauren, is that where you keep your business cards?
Obviously.
Yeah.
Dude, this is all smolder, man.
Yeah, it's total smolder. Yeah, she hands him her card from her bra, so how could he not call?
Well, exactly. Right,
and to get an art deal.
Tia Carrera in this movie is a great Bond girl without being an actual Bond girl. I mean,
really, they didn't use her very much. They should have used her more.
She's kind of a villain, and she's great at it.
No, she predicted, what's her name from The World's Not Enough, that the villain.
Oh, give me a fucking
not
break.
Christmas Jones, but the other one.
Uh-huh, yeah.
Yeah. I'm not even going to look it up. She's terrible.
I liked her in that movie.
Tia Carrera is better.
Yes, I'll give you that.
She is better.
But I mean, but the thing about it is, a good Bond villain is used the same amount. right? Like, yeah. that's what they're doing here. And, by the way, the card in the bra, which sets up the next thing, it's supposed to be sensual, hot, and you know what the thing is? Arnold plays it cool because mm-hmm. he, other than a sexy dance, he doesn't make a move on any of these women, which is the thing that's supposed to be the Bond trope. He doesn't have sex with anyone, which is why it's so funny that he's jealous of Bill Paxton, who is wearing a rapist mustache and the worst 90s penis haircut I've seen.
His name is Harry in the movie, but Harry
Trasker.
He's trying to make up for missing his party and for his family and for missing. And so he goes to try to surprise his wife at her work to, like, make up. And then he finds out that she's talking over the phone, and it ends up the conversation implies that she's having an affair.
Now,
and her sassy black friend is like, oh shit, get enough for both of us. And I'm like, you know what? If I ever have to look at my friend Daniel and be like, have enough sex for me too, I realize it's a very sad day.
That one scene when Arnold is walking on the street and he looks so sad because he just found out that he thinks she's having an affair. I was... died. I was
beat by the Arrested Development storm cloud.
Yeah. Oh my god. It was like so over the top. I loved it.
It's so funny.
Thank you. I mean, that is what happens, Lauren. Thank you. But before we get into that, I think we need to skip back into why he missed his own birthday with his family, which is because of the
sexy fight.
Oh, dude, yeah, in the bathroom. That is John Woo shit.
Poor old Jewish man trying to take a shit is like, oh no, they're trying to have a fight.
Did you notice he was whistling Edelweiss while he was using the urinal? Yes.
And he was taking a loud shit with his big beard, and all of a sudden, seven people came in with machine guns. It is something.
There was like four people there. Two of them get killed. One of them ends up with their face in the urinal. Not sure. I forget what happens to the other one.
Tell me who you're working
for. Well, he chases him. There's one guy he chases, which ends up
being the leader.
Yeah, that's the leader.
Oh, he's on a motorcycle, and Schwartz is on a horse.
It's on a horse. He rides through a hotel on a horse.
They both get in elevators in the motorcycle and the horse.
Yes.
Okay, this is part of where the illusion shattered for me. There are no skyscrapers in Washington, D.C. It's
obviously in Alexandria.
Yeah.
But I mean, again, this is a scene which they rip off in Spy Hard, and it feels closer to Spy Hard.
But I love the little humor, like, that's sprinkled in.
It is,
it's
very funny.
It's great.
And then, like, even
the couple that goes on the elevator, the guy's like, oh, beautiful animal.
Could you push the button for the top floor?
Whenever the horse's butt moves, the woman's like,
like they have to move with it, and then she gets beamed in the face with the horse's tail constantly.
What about the scene where they're trying to get between skyscrapers? The terrorist leader makes it on the motorcycle into that pool,
and the horse doesn't jump.
Well, there's that Harold Lloyd reference with Schwarzenegger dangling off the building, holding onto the harness.
It's a good bit, man.
Yeah,
it's funny, and the horse is.
It reminds you that this is a comedy.
Yes.
He's talking to the horse. It's like, you couldn't just go the extra few feet? Just, come on. You
well, and it. The last line is like, he goes, you call yourself a cop?
Yeah.
And he goes, come on.
Oh, yeah. Mom. He steals that horse from a police officer. He's like, federal agent in pursuit of suspect. I need your horse.
So, fun trivia.
Oh, please. They eat the horse?
Arnold almost died in this movie with the horse.
No kidding.
Yeah, with that horse. The horse bucked him or something. It was bad.
Bucked.
That was one of his...
Bucked him.
Bucked.
This wasn't said. Zoo the documentary.
Oh, boy.
he almost had a near-death experience. Arnold talks about it. He almost died from
this movie. We didn't mention this in the movie. This is the second movie where the star almost died that we did. We did Mummy, where Brendan Fraser almost accidentally died when they lynched him.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
Well, either way, that scene beforehand is great. James Cameron is a master of action scenes, and shootouts.
Well, and I never saw him direct jokes so well. But that scene even is very funny. Like, the man, he's like, whoa! Like, concierge, where, like, he's, like, directing people to this very expensive hotel. And by the way, I point this out when I'm watching. They go from one hotel to the Marriott, the first hotel they went in is that weird Trump hotel that he owns now that's in the old federal mail building.
Oh, gross.
Oh, yeah.
This is before he owned it, so it's fine.
Got it.
And he's going to lose $450 million on trying to sell it now that he's in trouble.
Yep.
So that's good.
Yeah.
But anyway, so then he ends up the Marriott, they end up on the top of the building, and the terrorist makes the jump and then slicks back his hair like he's Pierce Brosnan. Mm-hmm. And he's like, you know, Hoss, you could have made it. You call yourself a cop? And, which is such a funny fucking scene.
You know what I think the weirdest part of the scene is Tom Arnold is outside the hotel ready to, you know, lay down the law with his gun, and the terrorist, the lead terrorist with his submachine gun starts shooting at him, and he like hides behind a light pole and amazingly doesn't get hit.
It's like, okay, all right. He grabs his balls and is like, oh, thank God.
And there's a lot of punch behind that pole, man.
That pole didn't protect much, but no, it did not. Did what it had to.
I do like the idea that he's like, oh, the boys are good. I mean, again, it would be later if Tia Carrere grabbed her tits and she's like, oh, the girls are fine. Like, there's just something to this, which I wouldn't pass to Jimmy Cameron. Like, he's fine there, but it's just so funny. He's like, oh, at least Roseanne didn't get these. And then we move to the next scene.
Well, anyway, that's pretty much what happens there. There's a big shootout between Schwartz and the lead terrorist. The lead terrorist gets away. And then...
Then we have the soggy cake scene where everyone's asleep.
Yeah.
And Elijah Dushku's been texting with the guy with the moped for 20 minutes.
Oh, yeah. And
1994 dick pics.
Is what? That a Guns N' Roses Terminator 2 reference? Because Tom Arnold says, like, oh, she's not looking up to you anymore. She's looking up to Axl Rose and MTV.
And Madonna.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, Guns N' Roses did that song in Terminator 2, right?
I will also say, I mean, yes, it might be a dot for the cat, but also the idea that you can reach any high school girl or any high school guy even. Like, that is a zero-sum game, especially since, remember, they think their dad is a loser who sells computers to no one.
Oh, yeah, because his daughter, like, throws the snow globe he got her...
Immediately to the garbage can.
Yeah, in Switzerland into the garbage can.
Yeah.
Anyway, second
movement.
Yes, let's get to the second act.
Here's what I really liked this act of the film. Like, this is where it came alive to me. Like, it was more than just a spy flick. This is where it becomes fun.
Yeah.
And so we think, or Arnold Schwarzenegger thinks his wife is having an affair. He tracks his wife. He has Tom Arnold put spy tech in her purse. So he's tracking her. He's listening to her. She goes for lunch, and she meets Bill Paxton. Oh, yeah, okay. So Bill Paxton is a used car salesman, and Arnold Schwarzenegger goes to his car lot and takes the car for a ride, this sexy Corvette. And so here we see Bill Paxton unload his entire scheme to Arnold.
It is indeed a little red Corvette that
he... Of course it is, a little red Corvette. And this is like creeper level, like psychopath, scheme that he pretends to be a spy. He befriends these housewives who are looking for excitement in their lives, and then, you know, just progressively tortures them.
So the impression I got from this is Arnold is just trying to get like definitive evidence or information that there is an affair going on from both him, from Bill Paxton and his wife, because he interrogates his wife from behind an interrogation glass, so she doesn't know.
Literally kidnaps her.
This entire thing is great. After he finds out what Bill Paxton's doing, and Bill Paxton takes Jamie Lee Curtis to his trailer, they cut it open and like arrest both of them.
As he's trying to rape her, force himself on her, and she's trying to push him away, and yes, then the CIA comes in. Helicopter, cars, guys in SWAT gear, take them both in for questioning.
I believe it's the Omega Sector, not the CIA.
Right.
The
cartoon version of whatever.
Yeah. And they stick Jamie Lee Curtis in a interrogation room behind a wall of glass, where Tom Arnold and Schwarzenegger are sitting interrogating her about her affair with this guy.
This is actually one of the best scenes in the movie because just of how Jamie Lee Curtis reacts.
She is a good actress.
Yes, she's genuinely scared, and when she's pissed off, she tries to break the two-way glass down with the metal chair that she was in.
Especially in face of questions, she says, none of your business. Back off.
Well, and this is her character development because, the whole thing, the Bill Paxton thing is interesting because, this is very Dr. Phil shit, but it's not a physical relationship, as we can tell. It's an emotional one. And what does she want? Well, it's the last phrase of the, last double glass scream. But she just wants drama and excitement because she's a paralegal and he's a computer guy. And it's just a thing, he has to dull himself down and be boring so that it feels like they're being domestic. But in the end, she feels bored because it all feels rehearsed.
You know what this movie predicted? WandaVision.
I've never seen
what?
It.
I have not seen that yet.
I've seen the first two episodes. I haven't seen the rest of it.
Okay, I'm Disney Plus then. Yeah. You know that it's Wanda, the Scarlet Witch, and then Vision living in the 1950s sitcom?
Yeah, I love Lucy. Right. Yeah. It's an interesting quirk, but I have no idea where it's going.
Nice.
I think that's kind of what they're doing. They're
Man in the Gray Flannel Suit kind of is boring, right? It's a critique of the 1980s.
So he interrogates her behind a double glass and then threatens saying, and I don't know if he's just trying to okay, this is finally a joke. I've gotten information. She's not having an affair. We're good. She loves me. We're awesome. But then he still says, your code name, your spy name is Doris.
Oh,
and you'll get a call soon, or else your family will be in danger. Mm-hmm. So I don't know if he's still playing with her, so then he can take her to the hotel.
Yes.
This is him being nice to her,
right?
Then that's probably a problem.
This is him giving her a thrill.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And
her a thrill. Saying her code name is Doris, so she gets a call on the telephone. This is Doris. Now she has to go to the hotel and wear something sexy.
I do like the gag that he's like, your contact's name is Boris, and you're like, and she's like, Natasha? It's a good gag. Yeah. I mean, it's a moose and squirrel, but it's funny. and he goes, look, and this is very Bond too, because he has a very specific taste that he likes to watch. It's something. It might explain why Cameron's second divorce happened or whatever, but.
And they do the most, in. Obviously, hindsight is a thing, but they do the stupidest way. They have a guy in a French accent record on a tape recorder the whole conversation that he's going to have with Jamie Lee Curtis in this hotel room.
Now, we might get emails about this, but was that the original actor in the French movie this is based on?
I can look as quickly as I can, but God,
I didn't know it was based on a French film until you told me 15 minutes ago, so I have no idea. He's French, so possibly.
I will say the accent doesn't sound stilted, so it might be a Frenchman.
And to his credit, the actor even pokes his head out of the soundstage and looks at Tom Arnold and says, this is garbage. Who wrote this?
Yeah.
But it's great. She's in the hallway about supposed to meet this guy. She thinks she's supposed to be a prostitute.
Wearing something.
She rips her dress, the linings off her dress. And then there just happened to be a vase in the hallway full of flowers and water. And she puts the water on her hair to slip back to make it.
Because she was still looking very dowdy in her sexy dress.
Awesome.
I have a question. How worn do you think the tapes of Blockbuster were during this scene?
Probably very.
Dude.
Yeah.
My buddy, I called a friend of mine. Then we're talking about what we're doing tonight. And Zeus watched it with me. And he's like... No, often I jerked off to this, and
he would just,
and then not that, but someone else, and he's like, I'm like, yeah. And he goes, the problem with VHS tapes and masturbation, I'm like, all right,
oh, let's just say this is one of the top five stripping scenes in a movie, I think, my opinion.
What's number one?
It's hot.
I have also seen Boogie Nights, so there's a lot of
Boogie Nights is good. Yeah.
I mean, Cameron Diaz on them rollerblades, like, that's something.
Heather Graham.
Heather Graham, excuse me. Yeah. Yes.
But anyway, and what I love about this and when I was researching this movie is Jamie Lee Curtis, she wanted to really nail this scene, right? And make it really great. And so to feel even extra sexy, she used her own lingerie. That was actually her outfit from home. I freaking love that. I love that.
The entire time I'm just thinking, God damn it, Nigel Tufnel gets Tap Man.
I don't even know who that is.
The six-fingered man from Princess Bride.
That's Christopher her husband?
Sarandon.
That's her husband, yes.
Oh.
Christopher Guest.
Okay.
Well, and also, further, it's the I mean, I've never been sexy once, but it is a pretty good sexy scene because she's like, her body looks great, of course, but she's also trying to dance and she doesn't know how to do the sexy dance, so she's out with her arms out at first. And then when she tries to do, like, the pole thing, she falls on her ass, and it's... I mean, it's just funny because, again, we're talking about a Bond ripoff. And Zenny Anatol knows how to be sexy. She doesn't, and she's trying so good. And guess what? She's a beautiful woman. I'm not saying she's not. Mm-hmm. But she's just trying so hard. It's very funny. Like, and that's where the jokes land.
I love how Arnold Schwarzenegger drops the...
The tape recorder
while he's watching that, because it's just like, damn, my wife can do that.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And she was supposed to, her and James Cameron were going to talk about it just being a black silhouette at first. And she was like, no, we're gonna do lighting. I'm not going to be naked, but I don't have lingerie. So I love that she kind of empowered herself for that.
Mm-hmm.
And this is only for
Sudsy maybe, but... I need to post, when we release this episode, the parody from The Critic, where it's her dad, Tony Curtis, doing it. He goes, and when he does the thing, he falls on his ass and he throws out his hip. He goes, this is marvelous. But this scene...
I was thinking the only thing this scene was missing was the You Can Leave Your Hat On song from 9 1/2 Weeks.
Well, and I will say, too, the reason this scene works for me in a lot of ways, of course, is that Arnold, who's there, he is the man in the chair, right? He's Bernie in the chair.
In the shadows, so she doesn't know who he is.
He has a tape recorder behind his back playing whatever this actor is, right? But he's actually so beguiled by his wife, he drops it more than once, right? Like, and he's trying to fucking figure the scene out. But that's what it's like to be a spouse. Like, he actually is entrangled by his wife, and you're right. Jamie Lee Curtis is the most beautiful woman ever.
But he is also terrorizing her, because she knows she's a random stranger, and then he tells her to get off the bed, so she thinks she's about to be, like, raped, basically. Yep. Right.
Yep. Which is why she knocks him out with the telephone.
With the telephone, mm-hmm. Yes.
But I will say three things about this. First, you're right. But she asserts herself anyway, and she's playing out a fantasy. This is a fantasy in her head.
Right.
However, as a male actor, he's entrangled by her. Like, he's in love with his wife doing a thing that he realizes he has missed because he's been absent. I don't know. It's just...
It works.
This is a movie... Because Bond movies generally, until the Craig era, don't think as much through... This movie is thinking it through in a very interesting way, because if this is just a sex game for the two of them, the end of it would be him revealing himself. And if the terrorists hadn't come in, it'd be a very different movie, because they're playing a game. She just doesn't know it. Well, I don't know. There's a lot of question marks here that are resolved by the fact that terrorists come in with a machine gun. And then we remember it's 1994 and everyone has to be an Arab nonsense.
Well, that is what happens. He tries to reveal himself and then the terrorists show up in the hotel room.
Well, yeah, she beats the crap out of him as he's, you know, I guess she's on the bed and he's trying to be sexy and he's about to reveal himself. She beams him over the head. She then kicks the shit out of him as she's putting her clothes back on. She's walking away. He's like, no, wait, stop. Harry?
She still doesn't recognize him.
I know. She doesn't recognize his voice. She doesn't recognize how he looks. And I did notice that all the scenes that we see, it's just from the back, and we don't actually see his head. He's cowed down, he's in pain or something. And she finally recognizes him. And as she recognizes him, and basically says, "What the hell is going on?" Terrorists storm in, and they're both whisked away.
First on a private jet with Tia Carrere as the
middleman person.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, the only thing we've seen so far that associates her with terrorism is when Art Malik, well, God, I mean, we haven't explained this movie. There's a lot of twists and turns here, but, like, after the original scene in Geneva, he shows up with her in D.C., and he's flirty, charming, whatever, and because he's flirty, charming, and whatever, the assumption is that, how do I put this? That they're on the same level, perhaps, but because they're on the same level, perhaps, like the whole thing falls apart. Then all of a sudden, Malik slaps her in the face. And he's like, "What are you doing with whatever his name is, Rehnquist?"
Yeah, you're right, Nick. And the third act is actually pretty interesting because Tia Carrere was kind of like a side character going into this, but then in the third act, she is the like straight up main villain.
Right. Mm-hmm. And eventually she started threatening Jamie Lee Curtis, which is interesting because as the only two females, which is a problem in this movie, you should have some females in Omega Squad. There's kind of like a, I don't know what the female version of a dick measuring contest is, a boob measuring contest, mm-hmm. a breast measuring contest over who's the sexier one, right? Because like they're both trying to appeal to his better instinct, not knowing necessarily the relationship. And my favorite part is the whole time, since he's a computer guy to her, Jamie Lee Curtis is just kind of like, he doesn't know what he's doing.
Oh, that was a great scene where he sees a nuke and tries to pretend like he doesn't know what it is. It's a humidifier.
Or an espresso machine.
No, it's an ice maker. That's what it is.
No. And then they grab her and put her like in a hold with the gun to her head. And he goes, okay, fine. It's a nuclear weapon with blah, 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 blah.
Well, they give him the truth serum at this point too, right?
Wait. I'd like to make one observation. Please. When they're on the plane, when they're kidnapped by the terrorists, they're put on the plane with Tia Carrere, they're giving them kind of a little interrogation. They both think the terrorists are after them.
Yes.
Arnold Schwarzenegger says, okay, they're after me. She doesn't know anything. She thinks this is all still part of some sort of spy ring.
Sex game.
And
they're after me, Harry.
And she's like, Harry, don't worry. They're after me. Don't worry. And she has no idea what's going on because she thinks he's still a computer guy. And it's not until...
And they're both trying to take attention away from each other. They're
exactly.
Like, oh, you don't want him. He's not important.
Nothing
he's
to
not...
me.
Oh, she doesn't know anything. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Ditch the bitch, I think, is
yes.
a line of this movie.
Yes. It's a fascinating and fun little game that they play with this film. Until, you know, they all get into prison and they're being interrogated. And she realizes, oh, he is a spy. Oh, this is weird.
Yeah.
Have you ever killed anybody? Yes, but they were all bad.
Yep.
I mean,
the classic line.
I will say that leads us to the greatest gag of all time, where she tries to shoot the Uzi and it falls down the stairs. And like,
this is where Kelly walked in, and she just gave that like that tut or sigh that you know all women do, and or at least directed toward me. And she just immediately just walked out because this is a preposterous scene.
See, I was watching that. I'm like, well, that's one way to do the Odessa steps sequence. But I mean, good for you, James Cameron.
I mean, this though. I mean, from the moment she's in the room or about to go into the room where she's wearing these like 90s ruffles and tears them to make her more sexy, she becomes the power, like.
Yeah, a far more interesting character than...
Well, and I don't know how to put this, and I apologize for women in here other than our lovely friend here, but, like, the lifted breast and, like, the power look, it's not sexual here. It's a sign of power in the same way that Captain America shows his pecs. Like, Because, like, you're like, oh, this is a sexy scene. No, no. Jamie Lee Curtis is now the power of the scene in the way that Arnold is. Because, like, as Arnold gets, like, Captain Kirk, where, like, his uniform gets worn or torn, she's just showing, like, power, like, boobs out front and holding a gun. Like, and she gets more confident doing so. It's not sexual to me. It's like she is becoming the action heroine that Arnold is, and by the end, she almost becomes more powerful than he is. Except in the fucking last 20 minutes, where all of a sudden it becomes about their daughter, which is nonsense.
Yeah.
If you cut that out, it'd be a better 100-minute movie that ends up being a 2-hour and 20-minute
movie. Well, she thinks Arnold's dead, too, at one point.
Yes.
Terrorist. Son over the lake, and he had to run and swim under the lake. So she actually thinks he's dead.
Right.
The Schwartz kills a shit ton of people, starting with under the truth serum. He like throws a scalpel into that one guy's eye and then breaks the torturer's neck. And then from there, it's just like.
It's Murder City.
Well, I think there's even a line from Jamie Lee Curtis about how she married Rambo.
Which is funny.
Mm-hmm.
That gave me a joke about. That's
if,
good.
I mean, if you see something like what Bond or now Harry is doing, like it's preposterous. It's something out of a film.
Absurd. Yeah. Well, also during this sequence, there's the whole thing with the limo about that T. Carrere's on and Jamie Lee Curtis is on, and the nuke's about to blow up to show the Crimson Jihad's power, and it does while Schwartz and Jamie Lee Curtis are making out, but. Mm-hmm. That's how Tia Carrere dies, is she's on the limo after the bridge blows up. And yes, there is a driving sequence in this movie in the chase scene.
So that bridge is in Florida.
Right.
Yep.
And was actually going to be demolished anyway.
Oh, really?
Yes.
Oh.
So it was going to be demolished anyway. So they somehow made it to where they could use it in this movie. So part of that explosion of the bridge is actually real.
Wow,
I'm sure.
They were gonna do it anyway.
I mean, it looks real, so
yeah,
it must have been at least. Yeah, that's fascinating.
They were gonna do it anyway.
Huh.
So anyway, that's what happens to the main villain. But this movie doesn't end. There's like a 20-minute fourth act and then an epilogue, and the fourth act is all about how the daughter was kidnapped
somehow.
Yeah. His daughter is at the hostage, off screen.
Somehow, like I guess they set the bomb for like an hour and a half, and there was time to find his house in Virginia or DC or whatever, kidnap his daughter, bring her to a high rise in Miami within this hour and a half.
Sure.
I don't know, the time just seemed
obviously.
Weird there.
Obviously, again,
obviously.
If the movie ended, because like. I mean,
I said, they both realize, oh, we're both spies now.
No, but there's also a phenomenal scene where the two of them are embracing, they're kissing, and then a nuke blows up behind them.
Yeah.
Like, how great is that for the end of your movie? And they're just like, Elijah Dusku needs to be in the last scene, and he's like, I'm going to steal a Harrier.
That's a Hitchcock ending, having two people kiss as a bomb goes off.
Yeah.
Or the Atomic Cafe, or, you know, sometimes, like, Ertl the Turtle shows up and he's like, you know, you could hide in your shell. Oh, no.
Oh, no.
That was a good one, Nick.
So he has to save his daughter. So he gets in the huge Air Force airplane to get it that he hasn't
the
driven
Harrier
or something.
Yeah.
Later,
he was 10 years in this jet, or whatever it is.
That was 10 years ago that they last flew.
It's like riding a bike.
Yeah.
And he, of course, runs over a police car.
Which is funny.
Yeah.
I mean, the problem is, it's not that this is joke-em-ups, which it is. It's just that the movie should have ended with the fucking nukes. Like, this all feels tacked on. Like,
well, they just needed an extra action sequence, which they get on the building, which I love the Harrier shooting into this glass building. It's very Matrix-y. Like,
you have
the machine guns just plowing into this building, just destroying it and killing everybody inside.
Or they look out the window and they see the Harrier, like, rise up out of, like, the horizon line. Like, that's also a good scene.
Oh, the final shot with the main villain attached to a missile on the Harrier jet and Schwartzy going,
you're fired, and like the launching famous, it through the building. The famous that was line. Great.
I will say the thing that bothered me the most is they apparently filmed it in Nakatomi Tower too, because it's all like the unfinished floor in a building too. Like, it's just like, you know, Bruce Willis is not a very good actor, so I'm going to do it myself.
Come out to the coast, we'll have a few laughs.
That's right. But
he even looks at his daughter, like, tilts his head, so she knows that he's going to tip the terrorists off the plane.
He looks at her like he's a fucking Labrador Retriever. He's like, you know, I'm going to tilt my head to know, like, there's a thing going on.
You're holding onto glass, but just hold on harder.
Dushku is great in these last scenes, because she's the one who, like, prevents the terrorist group from... blowing up a nuke in what is it, Miami?
Yeah. So I mean, she steals the key.
Yep.
To that, I guess they turn
nuclear weapon launchpad.
Exactly. Yeah. It's like they say to somebody like, "When I turn this key, what key? What this key? Right? Oh,
wait. Oh, the Miami key, oh. Like the Miami press."
Yeah. And she runs up onto the roof, gets onto a scaffolding, and you know she.
It's exactly what Casino Royale did later.
Yeah, yeah, and I think a lot of films have done it. But I mean, he comes up with the jet underneath the scaffolding. They both fall onto it, and yeah, the terrorist guy flies off into the sunset on a nuke or on a missile into a helicopter of other terrorists through the building.
Not a bad shot.
It was James Cameron at his best, really. Like it's a little bit humorous, preposterous, but.
And then you find that both of them are the spies. They're on a mission together.
That's right.
Yes.
And I mean, yep. For those of you on Patreon here, we will do The Abyss later, which is his money-losing venture, but when he first handled CGI this good. Now, again, it's a negative for him, but like, we'll see how the movie turns out.
Ed Harris punched him, I think, while making that movie.
And we'll Ooh. See. That's the one that Cineprod wants to riff. We may or may not. I'll let you guys know. But in the meantime, that's how the movie ends after 6 minutes. This might have more endings than Return of the King. But the very last scene, of course, is Jamie Lee Curtis's wife and them kissing. And then they're like, they're both about to go on a mission, like they're Mr. and Mrs. Smith or something.
Yes, exactly. It's the Mr. and Mrs. Smith ending where Jamie Lee Curtis and the Schwartz are... basically back at the same party as at the beginning.
Dressed to kill. I think they're actually doing another tango.
Yep. Oh, yeah, dude, it's the same tango.
No, no, no. But Bill Paxton shows up as like
Bill Paxton a again. Waiter.
As like a sommelier or something, and he's trying to talk up a woman, and they both fuck him up, which is the best part. I mean,
He pees his pants again.
Yes.
Yeah.
It's fantastic.
Oh.
Again, he's one of the best things about this film. I would watch a film about him all day long.
I agree. And then Tom Arnold in the van going, oh, come on, guys, mission guys. So, well, next time you guys are going to be in the van. Like, it's just,
great. So
it's a pretty good ending. Yeah.
All right.
So that's it. Let's go around the horn and give our final results.
I have not seen this movie in probably 20 years. It's great. I was worried that it would drag being over 2 hours. No, man. Like, Jim Cameron can direct it. I thought it would be funny because it's Jim, and it was great. I wish there was a sequel. I was almost fantasizing about the Mr. and Mrs. Smith sequel. I thought it would be very much like The Incredibles 2, where this time Arnold is at home, and she's off on the mission, and she needs him instead, right? Like, that would be the logical step, and this movie is surprisingly tight. There's not a lot of fluff that I would cut. Beautiful. Well called, John. Thank you.
I like this movie. I don't necessarily love this movie. I mean, when I was younger, I loved this movie. It was my favorite game.
Especially jerk off.
Yeah.
I mean, come on. The first time I had this movie on DVD is when I had braces.
DVD.
There you go. It's very entertaining. I really wish that like Blockbusters would emulate this more because it just flows great. It's so entertaining. But the more you think about it, to me, the more it's like, that doesn't really make a whole lot of sense. But you know, at the same time, if it's on TV on a Sunday afternoon, watch it. You're going to have a great time.
Go ahead.
No, I loved it. It was way more entertaining than I remembered. Is there a lot of plots? Like, would that is it realistic? No, but it's just entertaining. I love the cast. I think the cast is fantastic. It's, like I said, 90s royalty. One of the top striptease scenes of all time, in my opinion. It's awesome.
Totally.
Yeah, just thoroughly enjoyable. Is it going to win an Oscar? No, but will it entertain you for an hour and a half? Absolutely.
And I'm going to have to agree. Like, I don't remember when I last saw this. It must have been probably like some of the rest of us, somewhere in my teens. And seeing it again, it's got all the right points. I think I mentioned earlier, it's kind of like the Disney reboots of the Star Wars movies. It's almost a paint-by-numbers action flick, in where it's high points. But where it deviates is the whole family side of it that eats up a huge chunk of this film that almost seems like a secondary film. Like, you've got two films together. The James Bond, Gotta Save the World, and then you've got the marital affairs of Schwarzenegger and Jamie Lee Curtis, which understandably takes precedence, I think. That's where this movie came from. Like, we want to show a spy's home life and how that impacts things. And so it was fantastic. And it's humorous, it's action-packed, where it needs to be. The ending goes on a bit long, but you know, whatever. Most movies do. Again, I would love to see Bill Paxton have his own film, or that character have his own film. I think that's far more interesting than this was. But altogether, fantastic film. So, that is it for True Lies, and we will see you next time. Like we said at the top, the next James Bond film has been delayed quite a while. So when that comes out, we will give you an update, and we will do something special for that. But until then, stay tuned, and thank you for listening to Mission Briefing.
We're out.
There we go.
Nice.
You see some.
Ryobia Movies is a podcast production of Dude Letter Podcasting and is produced by Nick Hoffman. It is edited by Nur Trinette and Daniel Suttis, and is hosted by Nick Hoffman, with production assistance by Matthew Quinn, Daniel Suttis, and Nur Trinette. The theme song is Surf Shimmy by Kevin MacLeod, from incomptech.com. Licensed under the Creative Commons by Attribution 4 license, Creative Commons /licenses by /4.0. Thanks!